The Catra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Catra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. If you've ever sort of wondered what makes us human, you know, where does fate stop and free will kick in? Well, you're definitely in the right place today. Mm-hmm. We are going deep into a really fascinating book, Matt Ridley's Genome, the Autobiography of a Species in 23 chapters.
Right. And our goal here is to really get to grips with the core idea of this book, which is that our genetic code, our DNA, it's not some static instruction manual.
Yeah, not just a blueprint.
Exactly. It's dynamic. It's living, almost.
Yeah.
A historical document written over, well, billions of years. It's basically the story of us.
And it's not just biology, is it? That's what's so cool. Ridley connects our genes to these huge philosophical questions. Mm. We're going to tackle that old, frankly tired nature versus nurture debate.
We are. And show why genetics tells us that whole debate is, well, fundamentally asking the wrong question.
Okay, so an ambitious book needs an author with a pretty unique background, right? Who is Matt Ridley?
Well, Matt Ridley is a very distinguished British science writer, also a journalist. He's got serious scientific chops, a DPhil in zoology from Oxford,
right,
specialized in evolutionary biology. So he really knows the science inside out.
But he doesn't write like a typical academic, which I think is key here. He used to be an editor at The Economist.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And you can feel that. He takes this incredibly complex stuff, molecular biology, and turns it into, well, a story. Mm. An adventure, almost. Lots of analogies, great case studies.
He does. He makes it accessible without dumbing it down. And his viewpoint is generally optimistic about science, but he's very firm philosophically against genetic determinism.
What do you mean by that exactly? Against determinism?
Meaning, he argues strongly that our genes don't lock us into a fixed destiny. Understanding our biology, for him, is actually the path to real freedom, not proof that we don't have any.
Okay, that's a powerful idea. Let's talk about the book itself. The structure is just brilliant.
It really is elegant, isn't it?
Yeah. Instead of chapters on, say, disease or evolution, he uses the human chromosomes. 23 chapters for 23 pairs of chromosomes.
That's the central conceit.
Yeah.
Each chapter takes its name from a chromosome pair with chromosome 1, chromosome 2, and so on.
And then
within that chapter, he picks out a specific gene or a genetic idea found on that chromosome and uses it as a springboard.
A springboard to explore? What?
Big themes. Huge themes about life, history, fate, what it means to be human. So
yeah.
Chromosome 1 is about life itself. Chromosome 4 is about fate. You get the idea?
It makes the whole thing feel like a journey through ourselves. Part detective story, tracing our past.
Mm-hmm.
Part medical textbook, understanding disease.
Right.
And part philosophy seminar, thinking about free will. It connects the lab bench to, well, us, our lives.
Precisely. And the big takeaway running through it all is, you can't understand yourself without understanding your genome. And crucially, that nature and nurture aren't enemies fighting it out.
They're partners.
They're completely intertwined. One works through the other.
Okay, let's dive into some specific examples, some of those chromosome stories. You mentioned chromosome 2 earlier. Ridley calls that chapter species. What's the big story there?
Chromosome 2. This one's a stunner. It holds arguably the most compelling piece of molecular proof for human evolution. Specifically, our connection to other apes.
How so?
Well, if you look at chimpanzees, gorillas, orangutans, our closest relatives, they have 24 pairs of chromosomes. We have 23.
Okay, so where did one pair go or come from?
It turns out that our chromosome 2 is actually the result of an ancient fusion event. Two smaller chromosomes, which are still separate in other apes, fused together end to end in our ancestors.
Wow. So it's like two chromosomes got glued together.
Exactly. And you can see the genetic evidence for it right there in the DNA sequence of chromosome 2. There's a telomere sequence usually found at the ends of chromosomes right in the middle. And there are two centromeres where normally there's only one.
That's incredible. It's like a scar marking the exact point we branched off.
Precisely. It's a powerful piece of evidence for common ancestry written directly into our code. A real aha moment about our genetic history.
Okay, from ancient history to maybe a more troubling topic, chromosome 4, which Ridley labels fate.
Yes, this chapter tackles genetic determinism head on using the example of Huntington's disease.
Which is a really tough one.
It is, because unlike most genetic influences, which are about predisposition or risk, the Huntington's gene is, well, it's almost completely predictive. If you inherit the mutated gene, you will develop the disease, usually later in life. It's a devastating neurodegenerative disorder.
There is no environmental trigger needed, no lifestyle choice that prevents it.
Essentially, no. The gene itself sets the course, and that forces this incredibly difficult ethical question. If we could know our precise biological fate with that level of certainty, would you want to know?
Oof, yeah. What does that knowledge do to hope, to how you live your life?
Exactly. It's the starkest example of genes as a destiny. But Ridley uses it, I think, to show how rare that kind of certainty actually is in genetics.
Right. So it's the exception that proves the rule.
In many ways, yes. Which brings us nicely to chromosome 5, environment. This is the counter point.
Mm-hmm.
Here, Ridley talks about asthma.
Okay, asthma. How does that work genetically?
Well, there are genes on chromosome 5 that definitely increase a person's susceptibility to asthma. They create the underlying vulnerability. But crucially, those genes often don't do anything on their own. They need an environmental trigger. Things like air pollution, dust mites, cigarette smoke, allergens.
So the gene loads the gun, but the environment pulls the trigger.
That's a classic way to put it, yeah.
Yeah.
But Ridley pushes it further. It's not just a trigger. The gene and the environment are in constant dialogue. The gene might only be expressed if the environment sends the right signal.
Ah, I see. So if you have the gene but live in a super clean environment,
yeah,
you might never develop asthma.
The gene remains dormant, effectively.
Yeah.
This interaction is what he means by nature via nurture. It's not one versus the other. It's how they work together. Your life experiences are actively influencing how your genes behave.
That makes so much more sense than the old battle idea. Okay, let's jump to the sex chromosomes, X and Y. Ridley calls this chapter conflict. What's the story here, beyond the obvious differences?
Well, he does explore the genetic basis for sex differences and the sort of evolutionary battle of the sexes that plays out genetically. But he also uses this chapter to introduce a really mind-bending concept, genomic imprinting.
Genomic imprinting. Okay, what's that?
This is where things get really specific and kind of weird. Imprinting means that for certain genes, it matters which parent you inherited the gene from.
Wait, the same gene behaves differently depending on whether it came from your mother or your father.
Exactly. The gene itself might be identical in sequence, but it carries a chemical tag, an imprint, based on its parental origin, which tells the cell whether to switch it on or off.
Why on earth would that happen? Like a parental tug of war inside my cells.
That's actually not a bad analogy. Evolutionary biologists think it might relate to conflicts over parental investment. But the classic example Ridley uses involves chromosome 15. There's a tiny segment of DNA on chromosome 15. If that specific segment is deleted, it causes a developmental disorder. Now, here's the amazing part. If you inherit the chromosome with the deletion from your father, you get Prader-Willi syndrome.
Right.
But if you inherit the exact same deletion on the chromosome from your mother, you get a completely different condition called Angelman syndrome.
The same deletion causes two different diseases just based on which parent it came from.
Yep. The imprint determines which genes in that region are normally active. So deleting the region has different effects depending on the parent of origin. It totally upends simple ideas about inheritance, doesn't it?
It really does. Okay, one more deep dive example. Chromosome 17, death. That sounds ominous.
It does, but it's about a crucial aspect of life. Controlled cell death. This chapter focuses on a very famous gene called P53.
P53, I think I've heard of that one. Cancer research.
Exactly. P53 is often nicknamed the guardian of the genome. Think of it as your cell's internal quality control system, or maybe its police chief.
Okay, what's its job?
Its main job is to constantly monitor the DNA for damage from radiation, chemicals, just errors when the cell copies itself.
And if it finds damage?
It halts the cell cycle and tries to initiate repairs. But if the damage is too extensive, too dangerous.
And what?
Then P53 issues the command for the cell to commit suicide. It triggers apoptosis program cell death.
So cells killing themselves is actually essential for life.
Absolutely essential. It prevents damaged or potentially cancerous cells from multiplying. When P53 itself is damaged or mutated, that's when things often go wrong and cancer can develop. So life relies on this constant, carefully managed process of death at the cellular level.
Wow. Okay, so we've gone from this huge evolutionary story on chromosome 2 down to the molecular details of a single gene like P53. It shows the incredible scope of the book. What are the main overarching themes we should really take away from genome?
I think the absolute number one message, the one Ridley hammers home again and again, is nature via nurture. We just have to discard that old versus idea.
Right. Genes aren't destiny, they're possibilities. Switches.
Exactly. Dynamic switches that are constantly being flipped on and off by our environment, our experiences, even our choices.
So me deciding to go for a run or choosing what to eat, that's actually talking to my DNA.
In a very real sense, yes. You're sending signals that influence which genes get expressed. Your life actively shapes your genetic landscape. It's quite empowering when you think about it that way.
Yeah, it is. What's the second big theme?
Theme two would be the genome as history. Our DNA isn't just instructions for building a body, it's a historical record, an autobiography reaching back billions of years.
You mentioned chromosome 2 showing our ape ancestry. Are there other examples?
Oh, tons. Think about genes related to disease resistance, like certain blood types on chromosome 9. Their prevalence in different populations tells stories about ancient plagues those populations survived. Or genes like BRCA2 on chromosome 13, which help trace ancestral migrations across continents. We are literally walking history books.
Amazing. And the third theme?
The third is about the complexity and humility of science. Really emphasizes that most traits we care about, things like intelligence, personality, even height, aren't controlled by a single gene.
Right. It's usually lots of genes working together.
Yes. It's polygenic, meaning many genes contribute small effects. And it's also multifactorial, meaning many environmental factors play a role too. The simple one gene, one disease, or one gene, one trait model is almost always an oversimplification.
So the more we learn, the more complex it gets.
Pretty much. Which requires a certain humility. Science often reveals more questions than answers, more complexity than simple certainty.
Ridley really does have a way with words, summarizing these big ideas. Are there any particular quotes or phrases that stand out?
Oh, definitely. The central metaphor itself is powerful. The genome is the autobiography of our species, written in the language of DNA, a record of the history of every ancestor we have ever had.
That perfectly captures that genome as history theme. It makes it feel less like code and more like a narrative.
Exactly. Then there's his definitive statement on the big debate. Nature versus nurture is dead. Long live nature via nurture.
That's the core thesis in a nutshell, isn't it?
It really is. It's the paradigm shift he's advocating for. And finally, one that connects knowledge to freedom. Understanding our innate predispositions is the first step toward genuine freedom.
I like that. Knowing your tendencies doesn't imprison you. It actually gives you the information you need to make conscious choices. Knowledge is power in a way.
Precisely. Knowledge is autonomy.
So moving from the philosophical to the practical, how can we actually use this knowledge in our everyday lives? What are the real-world applications?
Well, the most obvious area is personalized and proactive healthcare. We're getting better and better at identifying genetic predispositions to certain conditions.
Okay, like the example you gave earlier, the APOE4 gene on chromosome 19, which increases the risk for Alzheimer's disease.
Right. Now, finding out you have that gene variant, it shouldn't lead to despair, like, oh no, my fate is sealed.
It should be a call to action.
Exactly. It should motivate proactive steps. Knowing you have that specific vulnerability means you can be extra vigilant about things thought to protect. Brain health, diet, exercise, managing stress, mental stimulation. The genetic knowledge empowers you to mitigate your personal risk.
That makes sense. It shifts the focus from fate to management. What's another application?
I think informed parenting and education is another big one. Ridley talks about genes influencing personality traits, for instance, the D4DR gene on chromosome 11, which has been linked to novelty-seeking behavior.
Okay, so some kids are just naturally more drawn to new experiences, maybe more impulsive.
It seems so, yeah. And recognizing that tendency as having a biological basis can change how parents or teachers respond. Instead of seeing a difficult child, you see a child with a specific innate temperament.
So you don't try to force them into a mold they don't fit?
Right. You work with their nature. You channel that novelty seeking into safe, positive outlets. Maybe encourage exploration, learning new skills, sports, rather than just trying to suppress it. It moves us away from the harmful blank slate idea and towards more empathy for individual differences.
That could really change relationships, couldn't it? Okay, as we wrap up, what was the single most surprising or impactful thing you took away from this exploration of genome?
That's a good question. For me, maybe it was the sheer, almost chaotic complexity within the genome itself. Ridley touches on things like selfish genetic elements, or what used to be called junk DNA, like on chromosome 8.
What are those?
These are sequences of DNA that seem to exist primarily to replicate themselves, spreading through the genome over evolutionary time, sometimes without offering any clear benefit to us, the organism. It's like there's this whole internal ecosystem of genetic players, some cooperative, some competitive, all just trying to survive and copy themselves.
So our genome isn't just one harmonious instruction manual. It's got internal politics.
Kind of. It adds another layer of complexity. What about you? What struck you most?
I think for me, it was the ethical weight that comes with this knowledge, something you alluded to earlier. Ridley brings up chromosome 21, which is linked to Down syndrome, and the incredibly dark history of eugenics that looms over genetics. Mm. We are rapidly gaining the power not just to read our genome, but potentially to edit it. And that forces us to confront enormous ethical questions. How do we use this power responsibly? What does it mean to be normal? Who decides?
That's the profound challenge, isn't it? We're at this pivotal moment in history. We have this incredible book, The Autobiography of Our Species, and we're learning to be its readers and maybe its future editors. The question Ridley leaves us with, really, is how do we ensure this story has a wise, humane, and just next chapter?
A powerful thought to end on. Genome really does make you realize we contain multitudes, billions of years of history, complex biology, and the ongoing authorship of our own lives.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.